Welcome to the Spirituality What? Podcast, where we explore the mysteries, joys, and challenges of being spiritual beings navigating our unpredictable human experience we call life here on planet Earth. I'm your friendly guide, Rebecca, ready to jump into our adventure of the day. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Spirituality What podcast. It is the first day of the new year. Happy 2025. It is the first Wednesday, which is exciting as well. So we are dropping the first podcast of the new year. It is a continuation of the one from last week. So if you're just catching up with me now, this is an exciting place, but maybe go watch the episode from last week. We are going to talk again with Leisha Song about self-love as spiritual beings. So if you need a refresher of what self-love is, check out the end of the last episode. But in this episode, we talk about self-love versus self-care and what that specifically looks like for Leisha. We talk about how we forget self-love. We've talked a lot about that in this podcast. All of these characteristics and attributes that we come into this world with that we forget about, or that are, I don't know, just like kicked out of us or stamped down or traumatized out of us, if you will. So we talk about self-love, we talk about self-worth, affirmations, and a really cool visualization exercise called the split screen exercise. She talks about this in her book, but we go through it live on the podcast as well. We talk about bilateral stimulation and starting the self-love journey. Her book, Love Hurts, which I mentioned last week. Another exercise that she's got in the book called the clearing exercise. We talk about aphantasia and visualizations, which, right, so aphantasia, those are people that cannot visualize things in their head. And so how does she work with people who have that? And then we get into the deep topic of boundaries. So with that, we are going to jump in. Welcome to the Spirituality What podcast. We made it a year. Welcome to 2025. Here we go. And yeah. So what is the difference between self-love and self-care? Because I think that it sometimes people might use those synonymously when I don't think they actually are synonyms.
No. Self-love, you know, is just the state of being. And self-care are the actions we take from that loving place. So self-care is the verb for self-love.
Yeah. And I think as I mentioned in this course that I was in yesterday, we talked about self-love too, and we talked about self-care and how self-care comes across as going to drink some wine and get a pedicure sometimes I think that that's just a very superficial self-care experience. I think that it's superficial, not in a connotation of a bad way, but just like at the very surface of what you actually want to be doing when you're doing self-care. I think that, I mean, how do you do self-care? Like, what does self-care look like in your life?
Right. Well, self-care is harder than getting a pedicure and having having a glass of wine with your best friend. Those are self-fun, right? That's fun. That's great. I don't want to discourage those things, but self-care is harder. It's doing the harder stuff. It's eating healthy. It's eating to what your body actually needs, right? It's moving your body and not being so sedentary. It's doing the body work like massage and acupuncture, or, you know, lymph node draining or craniosacral work. Being proactive with medical issues. You know, if your labs come back saying your hormones are out of whack or you're pre-diabetic, then doing the hard work of being proactive to get back to a healthier state. Having boundaries, boy, that is really, really challenging for people. Boundaries around folks who drain you of energy. I believe they're called energy vampires, right?
Yeah, totally.
So those are examples of self-care. And they're not easy. Self-care is not easy. Having a glass of wine, getting a pedicure, fun and easy. Do those things too, because joy and fun, those are all high vibrational states, and those are
Absolutely.
good for us. You know, they help
Absolutely.
expand our hearts and our creativity. But self-care is not necessarily easy, and it's not necessarily the things we want to do immediately.
Yeah, that's a good point too, right? Sometimes what's good for you don't love it. I mean,
Right.
across the board, right? Like when you're a kid and you're told to eat vegetables, like that's good for you. And while there are some, strange children in the world that really love vegetables, not all of them do. Okay, so
Right.
from your perspective, how do we get away from self-love, and why is it so hard? As you said, the work to get back to self-love is so hard. So what, from your perspective, what happens there?
Well, so many humans don't even like the idea of loving themselves, truly loving and accepting all parts of themselves, because they were given messages, either directly or indirectly, since they were kids, that they will never be good enough, that they will never be worthy. And in really rigid religious homes and upbringings, they get God, and God gets involved, and like, you're never going to be good for God. You were born a sinner, and the rest of your life, you basically have to ask for forgiveness for every mistake that you make, for everything, for just your existence, to win the graces of God. Well, that feels pretty defeating from the get-go, right? So, and we live, so there's that, those messages of no worth. And then there's the bigger culture and society at large that feeds us messages that we aren't worthy, especially women in a patriarchal society, right? Women and other minorities, that you have to be a certain way, look a certain way, act a certain way to win the heart of a man, but really to win the worthiness of society. So, and for women, we're coming out of this, thank goodness. Thank goodness for the younger generations, the millennials and Gen Z. They can read through, all the bullshit, maybe because information is more available, readily available due to the internet. But those of us, Gen Xers and boomers, we didn't grow up with the internet. So we were fed all these messages, kind of believing in them. Like, I guess this is the way we have to live our lives, basically in misery for the quote unquote greater good, right?
It's interesting that you bring up a really great point there, which is just the access to diverse opinions and diverse information allows one to be more curious in that way, right? Because you're right, like my parents and my grandparents, if your parents tell you something and your teachers agree and your church agrees and your postman agrees, like, and the newspaper agrees, like, how are you to know something else? You can't, right? Like,
Right. So it's really this kind of brainwashing, this, intercultural high society, brainwashing that has been happening for, I don't know, since the beginning of time.
Exactly.
And, we're just in the recent decades, we're awakening to that. The curtain, the veil has been lifted, and people are really starting to come into their own power, especially women.
So I wrote this down, self-love and self-worth aren't the same thing, but they're very related.
They're very related.
So what is so self we so we said self-love is accepting all of who you are. So what is self-worth?
I believe self-worth is, I it might be even the precursor to self-love. Like, I am worthy enough to receive love. I think that's
I
how,
see.
I think
It's
that's
like
how I
the
see it.
state before.
And, with folks who really resist the idea that they're worthy of love, that they deserve loving attention and protection and nurturing. I just tell them, okay, just put the words what if in front of that statement. What if I am worthy of love? What if I am lovable? What if I can accept all parts of me? And that softens that affirmation. I'm not a big believer in positive affirmations before doing the actual healing work, because it doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah,
And then,
you mentioned that in the book too. I thought that was like I was really like I 'cause I'm a big affirmation person too, but I never really thought about it. Like it's like there's a barrier and the affirmation is just bouncing around on top of a piece of Saran wrap or something until it can actually get all the like that was sort of the imagery that came in my head when you were like, "Yeah, but you got to do the work to be able to really internalize like the affirmation."
That's a great analogy, the plastic film. And that you're right, that affirmation just bounces, 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 and then there's another thing to feel bad about, and then you start to believe, "Oh, I'm so damaged
I
that
can't even
even
do
positive."
affirmations.
Right, exactly. So I encourage people who have a hard time with affirmations is to include these two words in front of that affirmation, what if, and it softens it and it opens up to another idea without trying to get rid of the negative belief. You're inviting another aspect in, you
It's
know?
that's a really good point. It is much softer. Like you're just opening the door a tiny bit to be like, what if it was true, that thing? It's interesting. I think I saw a video online about I love you. I'm sorry, saying I standing in front of a mirror doing the affirmation of I love you. That was a little out of context. My brain got ahead of myself there. But yeah, so standing in front of the mirror, looking at yourself and saying, I love you. And in the video, they were saying, you know, you do this like 3 times a day or how they prescribed sort of a certain number of times. And that potentially in the beginning, when you start saying it, you don't actually feel anything. But like eventually you'll get to a point where you feel something. And I didn't try it. That wasn't in my set of affirmations I was using at the time. But I think when talking about what you were just saying about the ability to actually connect to the affirmations, I find that kind of interesting because I wonder, even though if someone's not saying what if, but they're committing to doing this for 21 days or however many days it was, like in the video, if even just that commitment in their head of like, okay, I will do this is enough to like open the door of, okay, cool. Well, like we're going to take a little bit of this path and we're going to try this, even though you're not all the way there and you might not love it. Like a little slit in the plastic, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And the emotion of loving yourself is delayed. So that's not a bad exercise, although I have many, many clients who would not even begin that exercise, who wouldn't dare look in the mirror at themselves in a positive way. We all tend to look in the mirror just to see what our flaws are. But how many of us actually go like, oh, you know, I might not like the look of my stomach, but I sure appreciate what it's been doing for me, or my legs, my arms, what
Oh,
have
yeah.
you, right?
Oh,
Yeah, so with folks who have a hard time with even starting a mantra like that, I would ease them into it with an exercise I call the split screen exercise, and that's also in my book, right?
yeah.
Where you take a child who is in your life currently, who you love unconditionally. It could be your own child, it could be a niece or nephew, your best friend's child, or you can imagine your best friend at a particular age, you know, maybe age 10. And on the other side of that screen, you see your 10-year-old self. And you're doing this with your eyes closed, but you allow your eyeballs to just move back and forth from one screen to the other screen, inviting and allowing your loving feelings about that child to leak, to spill over to your child self, the other side of that screen. So that's a nice sort of gentle way of helping people increase their self-love. And I still will like leave the word love out of it, I'll say self-compassion. That's an easier word for folks to swallow.
It's like less big. It's
Yeah,
like
it's less
actually a
intense.
longer word. It's got more letters in it, but there's like less baggage associated with that word. I see that.
Yes, exactly.
I loved this exercise. I've never heard of this split screen exercise before, but scientifically, it sounds like it's doing the same kind of thing that like EMDR is doing, where it's forcing your brain to kind of complete patterns because you're doing that left, right, or right, left, right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Interesting.
That's why, I got the idea of this exercise from a magazine I read, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, and I can't re I'm for it's unfortunate I can't remember the author of that article. But then I started adding in the eye movement with it because I'm an EMDR therapist, and eye movement is bilateral stimulation. It is REM stage of sleep is the most restorative stage for mind and body, right? That rapid eye movement. And so the theory behind why EMDR works is because we're including that rapid eye movement, accessing both hemispheres of the brain. So then the healing process is more holistic. It includes the entire brain and the body and your emotions.
Nice.
So I include the eye movement, or I encourage clients to do the eye movement with the split screen exercise, just to allow both hemispheres of that brain to process what we're trying to do.
Yeah, and so I think an additional mention on the, what is it, bilateral stimulation?
Stimulation.
Okay, so the bilateral stimulation is you can do tapping too, right? Isn't that a thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
You can
like
tap bilaterally.
Yeah, so I feel like I've done it a couple of times. I also read this thing about to help yourself sleep better, you like cross your hands on your chest and you do like a tapping to try to calm your brain before you fall asleep at night. But I've also considered doing it a couple of times coming out of like a meditation, like an intense like this particular meditation that I mentioned where I sort of figured out about this polyp and all of that just to help. Like, I don't know, it just felt like I just needed some help to integrate it, if that makes any sense.
Oh yeah, totally. And sometimes I teach clients how to, not that there's a lot of teaching involved, but I show them how to tap on themselves. And there are some exercises where I do have them tap on themselves, preliminary to EMDR. And sometimes they just continue tapping on themselves just because it offers them more comfort, and it helps them also to feel grounded because they're in constant contact with their body. So
Like a physical
yeah,
touching, yeah.
tapping can be really calming, soothing, and integrating.
Yeah. Okay. So what is your recommendation for somebody who's maybe resonating with what we're talking about and like, I need to do some self-love work, but they've just recognized, so awareness that you need to do it, right? That's a kicker. We all got to get there at some point, or maybe we don't. But so what was your recommendation for somebody who wants to start the self-love journey? Like what would be a first step that you might suggest?
Well, I would have them read my book.
Yeah, girl, get it. It's a super easy read. It's a great book. It's got like the little workbook style things in it where you can write things down. I
Yeah, and
really
it's not
enjoyed
very
it.
long.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 138 pages, so it's not intimidating at all. So yes, I would start with that, but just a simple exercise could be just getting quiet, closing your eyes. This doesn't have to be an hour long, meditation in the lotus position or anything like that. It can just be get quiet enough and just to tap in and get a visual of who you were as a child. And that an age might pop up, a particular age will pop up, and you don't have to determine that ahead of time. And all I would have you do is just to acknowledge the existence of that part of you. And to thank that part of you for showing up. You don't even have to ask any questions. But of course, in my book is a clearing, is what I have, the clearing exercise. Like that's kind of the reason I wrote the book. And each chapter leading up to the book is getting you ready for the clearing exercise, because we talk about the power of imagination and the nervous system and the energy of love, and why it's important, on the healing journey. But in the clearing exercise, you're using a current recent trigger. And I'm asking you in the exercise asks you, where do you feel that trigger in your body? Where is that tension? And most people can locate it pretty immediately, even if they're not used to meditating. And then another question, what are the emotions behind that trigger? And then I go on to having the person imagine their physical heart, visualize what the heart is doing. What is it doing? It pumps. It pumps blood, oxygen, nutrients, minerals out of the arteries to the rest of the body. But in the exercise, the clearing exercise, I have them imagine that the heart is sending that energy to the pain point in the body, the triggered pain point in the body. And the heart is sending that with love. I have the client just visualize the word L-O-V-E. It's not attached to anybody or anything. As they're visualizing their heart sending that life force energy to the pain point. And then, another question is, how old does this feel, this part of you feel? And then get a visual of your child's self and offer some words of compassion to that part of you. Even if you don't know exactly how to heal that part of you, you're offering some compassion and then an intention to learn what you need to do to help that part of you. And then we wrap it up with gratitude, and
Nice.
that's the clearing exercise. So
I love that. And I tried to do it. I had dogs. I was reading when I read the book. I had dogs running all over my belly while I was on the couch and stuff. So I had a little bit of a hard time disconnecting from that. I had just a random question that popped into my head, which is, have you ever had a client that had aphantasia? Which I think, if I'm remembering correctly, that's the one where either that's not the right word, but the one I'm thinking of is people who can't like visualize in their head.
Yes,
And like,
yes.
how do you do the clearing exercise and like the split screen exercise with somebody that has aphantasia?
Right. Yeah, that is a little bit more challenging. So we bring I maybe I'll ask maybe a week, before the session, I'll have them bring in some photographs of them if they have any, when they were kids, when they were babies, toddlers, what have you. So physical objects can really help. If a client is okay with drawing, they can draw, and then be looking at those pictures, whether it's their drawing or the actual photographs, right? To because they know what a red apple looks like, but as soon as they close their eyes, they can't see the red apple anymore. Even if you tell them, well, the apple shape or whatever, and it's red, they just can't do it. Okay, no fault. But they still have an emotional connection, to all those steps of the exercise. And so we might have to just bring in physical
That's
objects,
cool.
and allow the client to even create a story if they need to. And the tarot and oracle cards can also help
I
with all
love
that.
that. Yeah, I've been, as I do meditation, I do a lot of visual meditation. Just I like listen to music and then I have visions while I'm meditating, I guess. And so half the time when I get done with those, I'm like, it's so interesting and I love it. It's like a dream, but it feels different. And I'm like, I wonder what, like someone with aphantasia, I'm like, they don't see anything when they're meditating. Like, that's so interesting. Like, what is that experience like?
Right. And it might be because I don't always get visuals either, but I can always tap into how my body's experiencing the meditation.
Like feeling how you're feeling
Yeah,
in your
the
body.
feeling, what does it feel like in your body to think about yourself at the age of five? What does it feel like in your body to bring up the idea that you should have been nurtured, that you should have been protective, right? That's going to bring up a lot of energy for folks.
Absolutely. Actually, my heart started racing a little bit when you said
Yeah.
should have been nurturing. And I was like, is my heart actually
Right,
beating faster? Like, what's going on there?
exactly. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. And I love you talked about boundaries. I don't think we've talked a ton about boundaries in this podcast. Maybe a little bit. How do you define a boundary?
How do I define a boundary? That's a great question. I've never actually been asked that question. But basically, it's defining like where my openings and my closings are, so to speak, like where my limitations are, right? It's not necessarily about the other person. You might create certain boundaries around certain relationships, but it's really about like what I need and
Yeah.
what I don't need
And
and
like
definitely don't want. Yes.
what it's I guess in so it's it, from how I've interpreted it and sort of the way that I'm trying to implement it in my life, if you will, is like controlling my own reactions. You know, so it's like
Yeah.
if you do this, you can do that. But what I'm going to do is do X, Y, and Z. And so it doesn't have, you know, it may be as a response in that way, a response or a reaction to behavior from another person. And I find that boundaries, setting boundaries with other people, especially people that we love, can be the most difficult. But it's like, as you said, it's really about you rather than them. But it can be really difficult to set boundaries, especially in the case where you're like, if you do this, if you act like this, if you say this, then I'm going to do this.
Exactly.
And relay it in a way that's like not blaming and defensive, but more of I have to protect myself in some, it's such a protection mechanism in that way.
Right, exactly. I mean, the best boundary is really when you can come at it from this neutrally emotional place where you can continue, you can continue to disrespect me, but I'm not going to be a part of your life much, if at all. Right? And then people ask me, well, what do you do when people keep testing and pushing your boundaries, or they just disrespect your boundaries? And I go, then you probably need to create a different boundary, and one that is probably going to be more rigid and more strict.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Lisa, I just looked at this. I haven't looked at the clock in a minute, and I'm like, oh my God, our time is up. I can't believe our time's up already. So what is one final thought that you would like to share with folks on self-love?
Hey, this sounds really, it might sound really cheesy. It might sound like a Hallmark card,
Do it.
but I am serious when I say you can never go wrong with even just a little bit of self-love, just a little bit, because it will have a ripple effect for all the aspects of your life. And it never lets you down. Actual self-love, self-acceptance. So that's good for you. And what you're doing is when you do that, you're also giving permission for those around you to do the same thing. So there's the ripple effect. It keeps going outward. So you can never go wrong with a little bit of self-love.
I love that. Awesome. So, Alicia, if somebody had a question or they wanted to get in contact with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, so my website is, if you're curious about how I work with trauma, with clients, with spirituality, my website is sacredhealingplacetacoma.com. And my Instagram and Facebook are also Sacred Healing Place Tacoma. And my email is sacredhealingplace@gmail.com. And that's probably the best way to get in touch with me.
Awesome. Wonderful. And I will include all of the links to Instagram and the website and everything in the show notes in case someone's driving and they're like, I didn't write that down. They can kind of
Right.
get to it after the fact.
Yeah.
Well, wonderful, Alicia. This was an absolutely enlightening conversation and really authentic, which is the whole purpose of this podcast. I loved it. So thank you very much for your time today.
And thank you for having me, Rebecca. It was a lot of fun being here with you.
And with that, we are wrapping up this self-love episode, and we are technically wrapping up 2024 as a year for the Spirituality What podcast. So next week is going to be a little bit of a different episode. I'm not going to do an interview. I'm just going to talk a little bit about how I got the idea of doing this podcast and kind of what the podcast has meant to me over the last year. And then we will get back into our interviews. If you have any ideas for interviewees, would like to be on the podcast, you can reach out to me at spiritualitywhat@gmail.com or spirituality.what on Instagram. Happy to take ideas, love interactions with the audience. And thanks again, everybody, for making the Spirituality What podcast a success in 2024. Catch you next week. Thank you for joining me on today's Spirituality What adventure. Subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. Visit us on Instagram at spirituality.what to interact, tell us what spirituality means to you, and even provide some of your own personal musings. Human on, you phenomenal spiritual beings.